Hello and welcome to episode number 20 of the AFTV Newscast, recorded December 18th. I am Elias Saba. I run AFTVnews.com, and this is where I talk about the week's Fire TV news. Of course, I always end the episode with a whole bunch of Q&A questions and answers that people have submitted for me, so stick around after the news portion. For people watching live, of course, they can always tweet me at AFTVnews. I'll answer questions live as they come in, or just save them for the end. Got a whole bunch of great stories to talk about. Got a new Fire TV update, 5.0.4. We'll talk about what that brings. Some nice new features, some bug fixes, and some new features, which is pretty cool. I thought it was just going to be a bug fix. Got some updates to Alexa. Alexa got some new news brief options from CNN and Bloomberg. And also, Alexa skills can be rated and reviewed. And so we've got a little top 10 list going on. Got a lot of great apps that came out this week. And then we'll talk a little bit about Netflix and what they're doing with their re-encoding project. So first story of the day is that the Fire TV 2 and the Fire TV Stick with a voice remote have just started to receive software update version 5.0.4. Now, I'm sure this update will eventually come to the first-gen Fire TV and the older Fire TV Sticks, probably next year. This is kind of what I've heard. But for the time being, they're only available for devices that are already running Fire OS 5. And from what I've heard, we'll be seeing a Fire TV update 5.0.5 next year that would bring the subscription features to the Fire TV. And so I'm thinking that or the one right after that one will probably be the big Fire OS 5 coming to older devices. This is a guess. The 5.0.5 bringing in the subscription options, you know, being able to subscribe from the Fire TV as opposed to just being able to watch, also being able to browse. So that I've heard already from a source at Amazon that is coming in a 5.0.5 update. I don't know exactly when. I'm guessing early January. Hopefully we'll have all of this cleared out, and then Fire OS 5 will be on all devices sometime in January. That's what it looks like. As far as 5.0.4 goes, I haven't fully dissected it yet. I haven't fully taken it apart to see what all has changed, but we know about at least two pretty big things. So first off, Dolby Digital now looks like it's supported in 5.0.4. Now this is the older version of Dolby Digital, not Dolby Digital Plus. So that has been kind of a sore spot with the new Fire TV for a long time. Amazon said that the update to fix that was going to come November 30th, but looks like they were a couple weeks delayed, probably because of the holidays. But thankfully they did push it out. It doesn't look like it completely fixes everything. I mean, if you go into the audio options of the new Fire TV, you'll see that there is now a new fourth option that you can select just Dolby Digital as opposed to the previous Dolby Digital Plus options. And so if you've got an older AV receiver that only supports Dolby Digital, or even an older TV maybe that only supports Dolby Digital, you can now select that option. But there was a comment here from Vulcan, I forget the number. What is it? 195. So Vulcan195 has been waiting a long time for this update. He's popped in a few times in the comments asking about this and verifying whether it has fixed his Dolby Digital issue or not. But it looks like it's fixed it for Amazon videos, for him at least, but not necessarily for Netflix and HBO videos. But he's getting a little quirkiness, so this might be dependent on just his setup. But this is kind of the only report I've had about, you know, Dolby Digital update. He did a pretty interesting thing. I definitely wanted to point this out and thank him for reporting on this. But he basically connected his Fire TV to a newer receiver that supports all, you know, Dolby Digital Plus and the older Dolby Digital, then connected that to a TV, and then from a TV went out over optical to his older receiver that only accepts Dolby Digital. And so he was seeing Dolby Digital on his newer receiver just fine, not Dolby Digital Plus. So with this update, the Fire TV was outputting Dolby Digital perfectly to his newer receiver over HDMI. But then where something goes wrong is when his TV puts out that HDMI audio through the optical audio port to his new receiver, that's where it seems like something goes wrong. So I don't know if this is a result of an issue with the Fire TV or an issue with his specific setup, but for the most part, it looks like I would think most people are now going to be able to get just plain old Dolby Digital surround sound audio out of their Fire TV 2 and Fire TV Stick with voice remote, that is, you know, the devices that are running Fire OS 5. So great to see they didn't just forget about this. You know, I was kind of worried for a second that with all the audio fixes and all the bug fixes that have been coming out lately. I thought perhaps maybe this one just kind of slipped by. And since not too many people have older Dolby Digital only audio systems, audio receivers, that maybe Amazon didn't notice, but thankfully they did push this update out. All right, now moving along to the next topic, or the next thing that this update has brought, at least that I've found so far, is that now sideloaded apps are actually being recognized in the Fire OS interface. I thought this day would never come, but thankfully Amazon has been listening to the users, and they've recognized that people want to access their sideloaded apps a lot easier. They don't want to have to go into the settings app manager section. So basically, all of your sideloaded apps now appear just along with your regular marketplace apps in the app section of the Fire TV interface. So unfortunately, they're not appearing in the home screen's recent section. So if you launch a sideloaded app, it still is not appearing on that home screen recent section, but it is at least appearing in the Fire TV's app section. Now, sideloaded apps might look a little funny just because the images are actually being pulled from within the actual app's APK. And so if the app's APK hasn't created an image that works well on the Fire TV, this is the app icon, that is. If they haven't created an app icon and included it into the APK, then it might look a little blurry. So like, for example, Kodi looked a little blurry, not so great. The other apps that come from Amazon's App Store, those images, I'm pretty sure, are being pulled from Amazon's servers. They're not actually being taken out of the APK itself. So a little bit quirky there, but you know, what are you going to do? It's not horrible. So apps that are sideloaded will have this little tag under them in the interface saying this app was not downloaded from Amazon, which is totally fine. Thankfully, you can add these apps as favorites, and so that causes them to show up at the very front of your app library list, and so they're pretty much treated equally. Now, the whole thing with the home screen's recent section not showing these apps, that is most likely because the home screen on the Fire TV and the app section on the Fire TV are actually two completely different applications on the device. I mean, it seems like when you're scrolling through those menus, you're actually just inside of one single, you know, Fire TV launcher home screen app. But really, when you scroll down that side list, you know, here, if you're looking at the video version, you can see here you've got home, Prime Video, movies, TV, watch list, video library, games, apps. So when you're scrolling through those, you're actually launching different apps. So the home screen, when you're on the home screen, that is an app called TV Launcher, basically. And then when you're in the video section, you're actually loading the Amazon Video app. And then when you're in the games and the app section, you're actually loading the Amazon App Store app. And these are specific apps made for the Fire TV, but they are very individual apps. So this is most likely why sideloaded apps are appearing in the apps section, but not on the home screen, because they're two very different apps. So since they're different apps on the actual that encompass the Fire TV home screen, it looks like Amazon maybe hasn't updated that home screen app yet. Either that or that recent list, it actually seems like it kind of gets queried over the web a little bit. That's why, if you remember a while ago, you could actually get Kodi to show up on that recent home screen if you purchased Kodi from the Amazon App Store while it was available there. So that's why that was kind of like a bug, but Kodi would show up in that recent section, but it wouldn't show up in the app section. If you're still set up that way, you know, for some people, Kodi is still showing up in the recent section because they still have that association. And, you know, it's weird. It's a bug that they've kind of addressed. So people who install Kodi now, even if they purchased it through the Amazon App Store, it doesn't still show up on the home recent section for everybody. That's just like, it's a bug that got fixed. But if it's still showing up there, I have a feeling the way it works is if you're still seeing Kodi in your recent home screen section, it's probably because the Fire TV has never cleared that yet. So it's like once you haven't used Kodi for a while, possibly, or, you know, worse, you do a factory reset, now it has to kind of repopulate that entire recent section. Whereas if you're already seeing Kodi there, all it's doing is adding new items to that recent list. And so if Kodi never gets dropped off of that list, it just still stays there. And so the channel guide is chiming in on Twitter here asking what's going to happen to his first gen Kodi recent list. Most likely, I would think when you update to 5.0.4 or when the first gen devices get Fire OS 5, that is probably not going to work anymore. This is my best guess, but you know, who knows. But hopefully this is just a bug in general, because Amazon has added official, you know, support for the sideloaded apps in the app section. That doesn't seem to be a bug that's going to get, you know, removed again. It seems like it was definitely there. I actually heard from one of my sources at Amazon about a month ago or so telling me that they've heard what people have been saying about sideloaded apps. You know, he kind of hinted at the fact that they're going to make it easier to launch sideloaded apps, and this looks like it's kind of the first step. And so I imagine that the home screen will get official, you know, support for sideloaded apps also eventually. You know, maybe this is just the first step, since they are two different apps, so they're probably different teams that are working on them, and they're just going to get updated separately, it looks like. Now, one important thing about Kodi specifically is that if you did purchase Kodi, purchase in quotes, you know, because it was free, but if you purchased Kodi from the Amazon App Store back when it was available and you're seeing it on the home screen, or at one time you saw it on the home screen, it will most likely not appear for you in the app section. Now, that's because when the Fire TV kind of checks the apps that are installed, it needs to determine whether these apps are live App Store apps or sideloaded apps. And so Kodi kind of falls in the middle here. It can find a record for it in the App Store because you've purchased it. So it's not going to appear as a sideloaded app. But because it was removed from the App Store, it's also not going to appear in the app section because of that. So it's kind of, it fits in this little middle area. And so basically, if you want Kodi to appear in the app section, you're going to have to go into your Amazon account. There's your apps section of your Amazon settings on Amazon's website, not on the Fire TV. And you're going to have to find Kodi under the list of apps that you've downloaded, and you have to actually delete it. Now, if you do delete it, then it will definitely be removed from the home screen. Well, not definitely, most likely. I mean, I don't know for sure. But just know that if you're seeing it on the home screen still on your first gen Fire TV, if you do delete it from Amazon, there's a good chance that it's going to be removed from the home screen. But it then will appear on the apps section. Now, this is only under FireOS 5.0.4. So those of you who are on older devices, leave things as they are for right now. If you're seeing it on the home screen, or if you're not seeing it on the home screen, just ignore it. Wait till your device gets 5.0, and then you can decide whether you want to actually delete it from your Amazon app library, and that way it'll appear in the app section. Kodi's the only one that kind of does this quirkiness, just because it was once in the App Store and then it was removed. I mean, if there are other apps that were once in the App Store but then removed and you sideload them, they're still going to kind of behave this way. But for the most part, you know, all apps, again, this could also just be a bug also that they could fix, you know, so that's why I'm saying leave it, don't delete it from your Amazon app section until you're, you know, actually on Fire OS 5. So I'll still be doing my full kind of dissection of this update. It was actually a pretty big update, surprisingly. First look at it, doesn't seem like there are too many new features on the front end, but this was like a 300 or so megabyte update. And remember, this is an incremental update. So it looks like Amazon has done a lot. This could possibly already have a lot of the code and the updates for the upcoming subscription option that's coming to the Fire TV. I don't know yet, but I'll be doing my full kind of looking through the code and checking things out, and hopefully sometime next week. I don't know, because of Christmas and because of New Year, you know, the end of these last 2 weeks are a little, you know, busy, but I'll try to get around to looking into that and seeing what's in this 5.0.4 update. You know, why does it have to be so big? I mean, in comparison, I think the previous update, the 5.0.3.1, it was like less than 50 megabytes or something like that, and this one is over 300. So we'll see. Hopefully there are some nice hidden features there that I can uncover. Even if I don't, hopefully they'll come out soon. So next up in news is that Amazon is now finally selling the new Wi-Fi based remote for the Fire TV separately. This is the voice remote that shipped with either the second gen Fire TV or the new Fire TV Stick with voice remote. It's the longer remote. I showed it off a few episodes back. If you want to check that out, I'll put a link in the show notes to the article I have that compares the two remotes very closely. And so Amazon's finally selling it. It does seem to be backordered though, so they are selling used versions for a few bucks less. I would guess these are versions that you know, people have returned their Fire TVs, and so now these are kind of refurbished. They're breaking them apart. So Amazon does that. They kind of keep a stock of just Fire TVs and just remotes to kind of give people as refurbs if they have issues with their device. But anyway, I know a lot of people were waiting for this to come around because the Fire TV Gaming Edition does not come with a voice remote. It only comes with the controller. I mean, the controller can do everything that the remote can do and then some, but I know people were waiting for the new remote to become available for purchase, and so that they can have both the controller and the voice remote if they bought the Gaming Edition. So check that out. It looks like they're backordered, so I don't know how long it'd be till you get them. But I'll put a link in the show notes directly to Amazon for those interested in picking one up. All right, next up in news is Alexa has gained a few more news brief options. So Bloomberg has contributed, I think, a couple different news brief recordings, and CNN is actually kind of incorporated into the Alexa news brief feature, where Alexa will read off almost full stories, I believe, off of CNN if you want. For those who aren't familiar, news brief is basically a feature of Alexa where you can get a customized selection of news headlines and articles either read out loud by Alexa or recorded by the actual news organization. So NPR has one, BBC has one. There's even stuff from sports like ESPN, Fox Sports. And so a lot of nice stuff. It's a really handy feature. If you're not one to really put on some music when you just need some background noise, I really love the, you know, the flash briefing feature. You can pick which services you want to include. And so Bloomberg is including two different audio recordings, one called Bloomberg Featured Interview, where they interview somebody, and the other one called Bloomberg Market Minute, where I guess they spend a minute talking about, you know, the stock market. And then CNN is actually the only news brief that isn't an audio recording. It's actually just Alexa reading off articles. And so there are options there. You can also just select categories like technology or sports or something like that, and then Alexa will just read off popular top headlines kind of at the end of the news brief. And so definitely worth checking out. It works on both the Amazon Echo and the second gen Fire TV and the Fire TV Stick with voice remote. And I'm sure this feature, just like all of the Alexa features, are going to come to the first gen Fire TV and the older Fire TV Sticks when they receive the Fire OS 5 update. Moving on, some more Alexa news. So now Alexa Skills, which are essentially like Alexa apps, they're ways for you to add extra abilities into Alexa. They're created by third parties, not by Amazon. But now you can actually rate and review your Alexa skills. So you can see kind of what's popular, just like, you know, you can rate and review apps. So this is a very welcome feature because from, you know, this point and back, all we had was basically a flat list of alphabetical ordered skill names and descriptions, and with kind of no indication whether it's really worth your time to check out these skills. Some of them are really silly and really not that worth your time. But just like with any app store, you're going to get a lot of junk and just a few really quality apps. And so it's kind of the same way with skills. And so it's great to see that Amazon has added star ratings and reviews to Alexa skills. This kind of tells me that Alexa is a big thing. It's here to stay. It's going to grow into its own platform, essentially. These skills are just kind of one part of it. I think down the line, we're going to get a full-blown app store. I've been kind of playing with the idea of organizing all the different Alexa skills into a kind of a section of the website where you can sort them by ratings, sort them by reviews, that sort of stuff. Just because right now on the Alexa web portal or the Alexa app, when you're looking through the skills, there's really no way to sort anything. You can search, but you know, we've got about 90 or so skills right now, a little over 90. And so once that number keeps growing, you're definitely going to need some way to sort that stuff. So we'll see. I might find some time to put out that feature. But if that's something you guys are interested in, please let me know in the comments and I'll kind of move it up the list of stuff I want to get done for the website. So now that we have Alexa skills ratings and reviews, I took a look at the top 10 highest rated skills. So I had to actually go through all of the skills manually because obviously there's no way to sort the skills right now. But it's an interesting list. You know, it kind of shows that it's a very young ecosystem. And so there are some kind of silly skills that are high up. But again, these ratings have just barely come out. I only looked at skills that had at least 3 ratings and above. I thought it'd be a good idea to take a look and see what is the top 10 list look like right now. The top 10 skills right now on Alexa, this quick events one is basically a way to add Google Calendar events. So Alexa has built in by Amazon the ability to read off your Google Calendar, but they haven't added the ability to add items to your calendar. And so this skill, written by a third-party developer, has added that ability so you can add events using this skill. So, you know, that's a very popular feature when it came to Alexa, the Google Calendar integration. And so it's no surprise that this is the top skill. Focus Word is the second top app with a 4.8 out of 5-star rating. And this one just kind of tells you a inspirational word or phrase whenever you ask Alexa. Biorhythm is number 3 with a 4.3 rating. This is if you're into the whole biorhythm thing where you have different cycles for emotions and intellectual and physical. And so this will tell you what your biorhythm is at any given point. Number 4 is FreeBusy. It's a service that essentially checks your friends' calendars to see if they're busy at a certain time. And so you can ask Alexa using the skill whether somebody is busy or free at a certain time, and so you can schedule something with them. So number 5 is Wordmaster with a 4.2 star rating. This is a little word game where You may have heard of this game where Alexa will say one word and then you have to say a word that starts with the last letter of the word that Alexa said, and then Alexa will say a word that starts with the last letter of the word that you said, and then it goes on and goes on, and you get points for which words are the longest. So, fun little game. Huffington Post has an Alexa skill that'll read off headlines and stories, and so they're number 6 with a 4.2 star rating. 7-minute workout is essentially what it says. It's Alexa will guide you through a 7-minute workout. And it's the number 7, appropriately enough, it's the number 7 top app or top skill for Alexa right now with a 4.1 star rating. Number 8 is cat facts. And as you'd expect, all it does is it tells you some cat facts. So this is a silly one, but it's a 4-star rating and people love their cats and their gadgets. So no surprise we've got something cat related in the top list. Garageio is a really interesting service. So they're basically this like smart garage door service. So you can control your garage door with an app on your smartphone and, you know, close it, open it, check the status of it, that sort of stuff, lock it, I think. And so they've created an Alexa skill. They've integrated with Alexa pretty tightly. And so you can use Alexa to control your garage door essentially with this. And last up, number 10 on the top 10 list of Alexa skills with a 3.9 star rating is Gladys Quotes. And so for those who aren't familiar, Gladys or GLaDOS, the kind of AI character, robotic character in the video game Portal and Portal 2. And so this app will basically tell you quotes by GLaDOS from the game. So another little fun app. All right, moving on to new apps that came out for the Fire TV this week. It's been a pretty big month, as Decembers tend to be. I remember last December for the Fire TV was a big month. We got a lot of new apps. I think HBO Go came out for the first time in December last year. And so the first big app that came out this week is Fox Now. And so we now have a Fox Now app, thankfully, on the Fire TV. It's got actually a lot of great content that is available completely for free, you know, ad supported. You don't actually have to have a cable subscription to unlock this app, but it does accept if you do have a cable subscription, you can unlock it and basically get content earlier. So I believe the way Fox is doing things, and I think almost all of the big broadcasters now tend to use something similar to this methodology, where once an episode of a TV show has aired, it'll be available through the app for people who have activated the app, basically subscribers, cable subscribers. It'll be available the following day, so basically 24 hours later. For those who have not activated the app, the show will be available 8 days later for free, just ad-supported streaming without having to pay anything, without having to subscribe to any kind of subscription. So yeah, you have to wait 8 days, but it's great to see that you can actually get the content just fine for free. It's basically an alternative to having an antenna and using an app, either using your TV's built-in receiver or using an app like Tableau or what's the other one, HD Home Run. Also with these network streaming apps, they also kind of control which number of episodes you can actually see. So if you are subscribed through a cable subscriber and you activate these apps, you tend to get the entire current season available to you on demand at any time. Whereas if you are not subscribed with a cable subscriber, you only have like the last X number of episodes, usually like right around 5 or so. So again, they're trying to give you an advantage if you are a cable subscriber, but they still looks like they want to have that content. So for this Fox app, just like most of the apps, there is no live streaming option. You're only getting on-demand content, and usually, you know, at soonest you'll get it is a day after it airs live. So this isn't fully a cord-cutting app solution, but it does provide a lot of decent content for free for those who don't have a cable subscription. So right along the same lines, the next new app is NBC. So they finally released a full-blown Fire TV version app. Very similar to the structure of the Fox app, where you don't get any live content, you don't get anything earlier than one day after, and you have to be, if you're a cable subscriber, you get shows earlier and you get shows longer, meaning you get to access them for a longer period of time. Something I didn't mention on the Fox app is that it's only available for Fire OS 5 devices right now. So that's the second gen Fire TV and the Fire TV stick with voice remote. I'm sure it has to do with some DRM related issues. And so that's why it's only available on the newer devices. And so instead of having to support the older OS, they probably just created the app for the new OS. NBC app, on the other hand, surprisingly available for all devices. You know, each network's different depending on how much effort they want to put in. But still great to see these apps have been added to the Fire TV's platform. And again, a month from now, most likely all devices will be on the same OS. And so these these little hiccups where some apps work for one device and another app works for another device, those should hopefully be just a thing of the past soon. So now we have all big US networks, all four, ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox, all have Fire TV apps. Again, we've got a little bit of a mix-up with which apps work on which device. You actually can't get a single device that can run all four of these apps right now, mostly because of CBS. CBS was the first one to release their app. They released it back in October, and that app is only available for the first-gen Fire TV, oddly enough. Not even the Fire TV stick, I think. So I don't know what CBS is up to. The Fox app and the... Oh, sorry, not CBS. I think it was ABC. I misspoke. ABC is only available on the first-gen Fire TV, and that app was released in October. CBS was released in November. They are available on only the Fire OS 5 devices, just like Fox. And NBC is available across all platforms, it looks like. Again, hopefully this will all be taken care of, but it's really awesome to see that these big networks are showing some love to the Fire TV. Last app I want to mention... that came out this week is a new NPR app. And so it's called NPR One. And for those not familiar, National Public Radio is kind of a big U.S. News outlet. And so this app, one interesting feature about this app is that it actually syncs up with the mobile version. So if you've got the NPR One app on your phone and you're, say, listening to something in the car, when you get home, you can turn that off, turn on your Fire TV, and this app, it will pick up where you left off from your mobile device. So that's pretty nice, pretty cool, handy feature. I think, you know, all apps that are on multiple platforms should definitely have syncing features like this. So it's really awesome to see that NPR release this. So if you're into more news options, if the Alexa news briefing that was updated, it wasn't enough, here's an NPR app that just came out. So definitely worth checking out if you're into that. All right, before we move on into talking about Netflix, I just wanted to mention this game that just came out on the Fire TV. It's called Not a Hero. This game is released by Devolver Digital, who's kind of been making a lot of great games for the Fire TV. They're a publisher, so they're not the actual developer, but the developers work with the publishers and they help them out to get their apps on different devices. So this came out on PCs first, and now it's made its way over to the Fire TV. So if you're looking for a new game, I mean, it's kind of like a fast-paced running around shooting thing. They've got different characters that you can choose, and each one has a different weapon. It's this kind of retro indie pixel graphics. So the graphics aren't great or anything, but the gameplay is all that matters. So new game that just came out. It's only available on the Fire TV devices, first and second gen, not on the Fire TV stick. You will need a game controller to play this game, and so definitely worth checking out if you're looking for a new game to play. All right, last story we'll talk about before we move on to some questions and answers. I wanted to talk a little bit about what Netflix is doing to their video library. So apparently for the last 4 years or so, I think it's Bloomberg that was reporting this. No, sorry, it was Variety. Variety is reporting this, that for the last 4 years or so, they've been working on a new algorithm to basically figure out how to better encode their files. So Netflix has figured out a new algorithm that they're going to start implementing. They're saying that about 1,000 videos are going to get re-encoded using this method between now and the holidays, I think they said, before the end of the year. And then by the end of the first quarter of next year, so right around April or so, they're saying their entire library is going to be redone in this method. So essentially what they're doing is, instead of using the method they're using right now, where they have several different resolutions that they offer, 320 by 240 is the smallest resolution they offer, then it moves up and they've got 720p and obviously 1080p and even 4K content. And so for each one of those resolutions, they have a fixed set bitrate. Now the bitrate will determine essentially the picture quality. So the higher the bitrate, the more variety of colors that are available to recreate the video, essentially. You can probably find a much better explanation of what bitrate is exactly online, but for the most part, it has to do with the color, and lower bitrates tend to result in pixelation because when, say, for example, there's a scene where there's like a gradient, like in the sky, for example, like from a sunset, and so color is going from blue to orange to red, you know, for a sunset, where, you know, on a higher bitrate file, you'll have a lot more colors, and so you'll see a smooth transition in that gradient on the video. But with a lower bitrate, there's less data to work with, so they have to actually remove some of the color, and so you'll see pixelation where one color changes to another, and so it won't be a smooth transition. So that's kind of the little quick explanation of what bitrate is. So you definitely want a higher bitrate. But essentially what Netflix's engineers have figured out is that different types of videos don't always benefit from higher bitrates. And so, for example, it's very simple cartoons, they don't have those gradients. They just have solid colors. And so you don't actually need all of that high bitrate variety to make the picture look good. And so what they're doing is they're going to run an algorithm on all of their different videos, and they're going to determine what bitrate to encode the files in for every single video that they have. And so from one video to another, the 1080p version of that video might have very different bit rates. And so something that has a lot of action, a lot of dark scenes, a lot of smoke, for example, a lot of movement on the screen, you're going to need a high bit rate, and they're going to still use high bit rates. But for cartoons, they're going to use lower bit rates. Now, the main reason they're doing this is for their own pocket, definitely. It basically means that files are going to be a lot smaller, and you're not going to see that noticeable of a difference, if any. You know, they're hoping no difference in visual quality, but the file sizes are going to be smaller. That's very beneficial for Netflix, because especially when they're moving into other regions outside of the big countries, you know, US, UK, that sort of stuff, when they move along to places like China, where bandwidth is very limited, they're going to benefit from this a lot. But if you live in an area that has a data cap, you're also going to see a benefit in this, because they estimate roughly on average 20% less data with this new algorithm will be streamed through Netflix. So for the same movies that you're watching, you're going to be using 20% less data. And if you've got a data cap, that's a pretty big, impressive thing. Now, if you're like me and you don't have a data cap and you've got pretty good internet speeds and you basically want maximum bit rate because you can pretty much handle it. I mean, you know, 5,800 kilobits per second is what they stream their 1080p at right now. And so, you know, if you've got a big fat pipe and you've got no data cap, this is sort of bad news for you. But, you know, everything is kind of moving toward data caps, unfortunately. And so down the line, if you ever get data caps, you can also benefit from this. But they claim that the visual picture will not degrade in any way from this. You know, they've been testing it with people anonymously, asking them to see which of these two video versions are look worse, and people haven't been able to tell from the lower bitrate to the higher bitrate one. And so something to look out for. You should see some reduction in Netflix data, and hopefully no reduction in quality. All right, let's move on to some questions and answers. So every Thursday on AFTVnews.com, I'll put up an article asking people to submit their questions for the podcast. And of course, I also take questions live. You can always watch live. I stream every Fridays at 1:30 p.m. or most Fridays at 1:30 p.m. I will be skipping the last 2 weeks of December in case you missed it from the last announcement from the last episode. But most Fridays, 1:30 p.m., you can always get on live and ask your questions live via Twitter at AFTV News. First question here is on Twitter from Butka. She says, Alexa not appearing in the UK, but you can log on to the website. So can you sideload Alexa? No, you can't. I mean, it does. There is an app on the Fire TV that handles most of the Alexa features, essentially, but it's really caked into the OS. So I've never really tried putting Alexa on an older device. Yeah, most likely you won't be able to, unfortunately. Right, next question from Steve on Twitter. He says, is it ever necessary on the Fire TV to start a question with the word Alexa after the button is pressed on the remote? Usually no, but there are actually instances where it might be useful. For starters, if you have an Amazon Echo in the same room as your Fire TV, you definitely never want to start your question with Alexa, because it will trigger the Amazon Echo. But no, for the most part, you don't have to start your question with Alexa. The Fire TV will basically just try to figure out what you're asking for. Now, the instance where you do want to say Alexa is if the Fire TV is resulting in a content search when you're asking for something. So I found occasionally on the Fire TV, I can't think of any specific example right now, but occasionally on the Fire TV, I will ask something from Alexa, like to look up something. And instead of actually looking it up or triggering Alexa on the Fire TV, it'll actually just do like a search for a movie or a search for apps. And so in that case, you can say Alexa and then say your command, and then that will force it essentially to forward that command to Alexa, as opposed to doing a search. And so that's really the only time you actually have to say Alexa, is if it's accidentally doing a search for what you're trying to say. All right, next question is from Tom42. He says, any apps that will run one app and then another app that works on AFTV2? With AFTV1, I used Llama. I need to run WOL before Kodi. I also need it to be one click, no more 3 a.m. calls from parents complaining that Kodi no longer works. Unfortunately, I don't know of any. Llama was a popular app that people were using, and it had that ability where you could launch one app and it would also launch another one afterwards. Unfortunately, the Llama developer has stopped supporting the app, and it looks like it's not compatible. Well, that feature at least is not compatible with Fire OS 5. I do remember seeing an app called Tasker. You could look into that one, but I don't think that's a readily available one. It's going to be a little tough for you to download it because it's a paid app. But that's the only one I could think of off the top of my head that could possibly do this. But sorry, couldn't be any more helpful. Hopefully with the new additions from 5.0.4's software update, you won't need to use Llama or use these odd apps to launch Kodi. All right, next question here is from Scott Howell. He says, I recently downloaded the HGTV, Food Network, and Travel Channel apps. If you've tried any of these, how is the quality of the video? Live video stutters really bad, as if I have a bad connection. On-demand video is worse. Other apps work fine from different companies like History and A&E. I have tried them and I haven't seen any issues. I was actually surprised how well they worked and how well the live video worked. The only issues I've really had with the app is sometimes it'll get a little quirky where I'll see two different interfaces kind of overlapped. Like I'll see the list of shows overlapped with maybe the pause screen of a different app. So I've seen little quirks like that, but the video has actually been surprisingly good for me. It's always hit or miss with streaming video apps. You know, just because you're experiencing bad video doesn't mean it's everybody's getting the same thing. Because a lot of times these videos, they're coming from CDNs, content delivery networks, and those servers will be located in different areas. So some people, depending on their location, will get a better stream, better video quality. And so a lot of times these apps, the way they work, just like we were talking about the Netflix re-encoding, they will try to detect your network speed and then determine what bitrate to send you. And that'll affect the quality of the video. And so if you happen to be in an area that is either far away from the server that's actually serving you the video files, or for whatever reason there's congestion in between you and that server, that's probably the most likely explanation why you're seeing poor quality from this service and not from something like History and A&E. So there's really nothing much you can do, I mean, other than like contacting those companies and telling them about it, and hopefully they fix it. Next question here is from Tim. He says, with the upcoming release of 5.0.4, you have made the recommendation that users who wish to root or are rooted should block all future updates. What is the likelihood we will see a rooting method for those who wish to upgrade to the newest firmware? Has there been any progress from those at XDA on this yet? Yeah, I did recommend to block updates and stay on 5.0.3.1 if you were planning to root your second gen Fire TV. That's because the current rooting method for that device will only work on that specific software version. Now, Eric, the guy who came up with that rooting method, has said that it looks like they have not patched the rooting method on 5.0.4. But I still recommend staying on the older version, because what Eric needs to do is essentially create new images specifically for 5.0.4. Again, the way this rooting method happens, it's not like previous rooting methods, like the tile root method that was for the first gen Fire TV. It's not an app that actually goes in through a vulnerability, roots the device. It actually is an actual image that's created that you're loading through the USB cable. And so it looks like Eric is going to release a 5.0.4 rooting method. So you probably need to remove the root on 5.0.3.1 if you're already rooted, let the device update, and then reroot. It's definitely a cumbersome process, but that looks like what is going to happen right now. As far as the guys at XDA, specifically Rbox, hopefully might be working right now on a custom recovery and then possibly a pre-rooted version. I don't know for sure. I haven't been in contact with him for a while now, but you have to realize that it's the holidays right now, and so he's probably busy. And so I would not expect something to come out, you know, anytime in the next few weeks as far as installing pre-rooted ROMs or that sort of stuff on a rooted second gen Fire TV. It's kind of similar to the way the first gen Fire TV was rooted, where the device was rooted and then for a while people could not update. They were kind of stuck on the 5.0.1.0 software version, and then eventually basically Rbox came and saved us all and it's created the custom recovery and released those pre-rooted ROMs, and that let people update. So hopefully we'll eventually see that same trend, and so you won't have to do this whole unrooting, updating, and then rerooting debacle with the second gen Fire TV, but we don't know for sure. So for the most part, I would say if you're not rooted yet, stay on 5.0.3.1 if you want to root. You can find a link in the show notes I'll put for how to block software updates if you are interested in rooting. Next question here is from Steve Klein. He asks, what is the best and easiest way to download APK files at the Google Play Store onto an Apple iMac computer for future side loading to the second gen Fire TV? So unfortunately, there is no straightforward, easy way to just download any APK for side loading purposes onto from the Google Play Store, especially if you're using an iMac. If you have an Android device, that is your best bet, because with an Android device, you can download anything from the Google Play Store onto that device and then sideload it from there onto the Fire TV. If you go to aftvnews.com/sideload, one of the guides is that specifically is to install to sideload basically through an Android device. So that's your best bet. If that is not an option for you and you are stuck with just the iMac, then I would recommend looking at the Evozi APK downloader. It's basically a web service that you put in the URL for a Google Play Store app and it will see if it can basically pull it down or if it has pulled it down in the past. It's not available for all apps. It's definitely not available for purchased apps. It's only available for free apps, and even then it's not all apps. I'll put a link in the show notes to that website. It's just an online service that you can put in the URL for a Google Play Store app and see if they actually have it to download. Other than that, the only other safe way I would recommend is I can't think of it off the top of my head right now, but there are ways to emulate an Android device on a PC. I don't know if they actually support Macs. I think they do also. I want to say it's called Blue something, but I'll try to find it and put it in the show notes. But basically, you can, if you emulate an Android device through a PC, then you can install the Google Play Store and download apps through that emulated Android device, and then now you'll have the app and you'll be able to sideload it. So those are the kind of three ways, the best ways of getting Google Play Store apps onto the Fire TV. The fourth way, I said those are the safe ways. The fourth way is to just search Google for an APK, but I definitely do not recommend that because there's a lot more malware going around on Android these days. And so these apps could, even though they might actually be the app themselves, or worse, they're not even the app, but they could put something on your Fire TV that's either spyware or worse, mess things up. So I definitely don't recommend just randomly Googling and downloading APKs from like a hosting service like MediaFire or something like that. So Boudica chimes in here on Twitter and she says the service is called BlueStacks, the one that emulates an Android device on a computer on a PC. She says it's rubbish, but I agree. You can't really use it functionally, but if all you need to do is download an APK from the Google Play Store, it's an okay option. I don't really use it myself, but because I have Android devices that I can just use to pull down the apps that way. But it is definitely an option out there. So BlueStacks, and I'll put a link in the show notes, of course. Next question here is from Adam. He says, hi, Elias. I hope this time of year is a happy one for you and your family. Today, I'm taking delivery of a Vizio M70-C3 that supports 4K. Woohoo. So now I'm trying to get up to speed on Hertz, HDCPs, and HDMIs, things I previously didn't have to worry much about with my old 1080p Panasonic plasma. The M70 has 5 HDMI inputs. There are 3 that are HDCP 2.2. Of those 3, 2 are HDMI 1.4b and supports 4K at 30 Hz. The third is HDMI 2.0 and supports 4K at 60 Hz. I don't see a downside to just using the third, but as I understand the Fire TV, the other two would work just as well since the Fire TV makes out 4K at 30 Hz. Is that correct? Is there any difference between the three as far as the Fire TV is concerned? Thanks as always for the great webcast and awesome site. Awesome. Thank you for those really nice words. It is definitely a happy time of year for my family. I hope it is for everybody's. You've basically got things down pretty accurately. So the Fire TV has a HDMI 1.4 port, and so it outputs 4K at a maximum of 30 frames per second, 30 Hertz. And so any of those three ports, since either the 2.0 ports or the 1.4 ports, will work equally just fine on the Fire TV. You won't see a difference. The only possibility, very slight possibility, is that some TVs will, in their OS, will kind of favor maybe the 2.0 port or the 1.4 port, or maybe like input one. So you might be able to switch to that input quicker, for example. This is very slight. This is something I've seen on some TVs where different ports are kind of treated differently. So you'll have a better experience on one than the other. But as far as technically, all three of your ports are just fine. 2.0 is backwards compatible with 1.4, and so that's going to work just fine on the Fire TV. congrats on the new 4K TV. I still haven't taken that plunge myself. Hopefully next year at some point. Adam also says, and then what about HDCP 2.2? What if I have audio over Toslink coming out of the TV? Do I still get 4K? Yeah, that shouldn't affect things at all. Again, this will be more dependent on the TV itself, but it sounds like you got a pretty decent new Vizio. And so sending audio out of the TV over Toslink, which is optical audio for those not aware, it'll work just fine. You should be able to do optical audio just fine out of the Fire TV on any of those ports. Next question here is from Jim. He says, my Fire TV 2 and my LG Smart TV turns on when I press the home button on the Fire TV remote. But when I put Fire TV to sleep using the Fire TV remote, only the Fire TV goes to sleep. Any ideas why this won't turn off my TV? My Apple TV seems to turn on and off both devices flawlessly. So first off, for those not aware, the Fire TV, both the first gen and the second gen, it supports something called CEC, which essentially lets the Fire TV control certain aspects of the TV through the HDMI port. It actually works in reverse also, where the TV remote can control the Fire TV through the HDMI port. It's basically this protocol that both the first gen and the second gen Fire TV support. Now, that said, it sort of unofficially supports it. So it's a feature that's built into the device. You know, people who have these more advanced TVs that have this feature do have this kind of communication between the two devices over the HDMI port. But I say it's sort of a supportive feature because it's not really like, it's not in the documentation of the Fire TV at all. It's sort of there. It works when it does, but it's not something Amazon is pushing. And so that would be my guess why you're kind of seeing this little bit of odd behavior where your Fire TV will turn on the TV, but it won't turn it off. Now, this also probably has to do with the fact that the Fire TV itself never actually turns off. So when you put the Fire TV to sleep, all it does is it basically turns off the video output. That's pretty much all it does. Everything else is still fully running there waiting for you to start doing something with it. So that could also be it where it doesn't actually have an off, but you know, I don't know about the Apple TV's on and off states, but you know, it's one of those things that it's nice if it works, but if it doesn't, it's not really a supported feature anyway, so there's not much you could do about it. But there's probably no real reason why it doesn't do it that way. It's just that's the way they made the Fire TV. All right, next question from Lewis. He says, hi, Ayas. Friday night, last AFTV news webcast of the year and the start of 2 weeks of vacation. I'm a very happy man. I hope you too, and that you can enjoy the holiday season. Thank you very much, Lewis. I definitely plan to enjoy the next 2 weeks of holidays. All right, first question from Lewis is, hopefully we will have the update to FireOS 5 soon in January for the AFTV 1. I can't wait to play with Alexa and control my Wemo devices with voice, but I can only speak to my AFTV remote or the AFTV remote app on my phone, correct? And my AFTV has to be on in order to work, correct? I cannot work only on my app, right? Yeah, you basically have that right. The Fire TV has to be on in a sense that it has to be powered on. It will, you know, Alexa will work and wake up the Fire TV if it's asleep. But again, just like I said with the previous question, the Fire TV doesn't actually turn itself off when it's asleep. It's actually fully active, still on. So Alexa totally works. Yeah, you're right. You cannot use Alexa from the app. Essentially, what you're doing with the app is you're sending your voice to the Fire TV to then be sent to Amazon servers. So it does need the Fire TV there. And the app itself will never show you any Alexa responses. All it does is take input from your voice and, you know, pass it along. And so you definitely need to have the Fire TV. You can't actually use Alexa from the app itself. Sorry, you can't actually get responses from Alexa from the Alexa app or from the Fire TV remote app. So both of those, you know, do not interact with Alexa directly. Only the Amazon Echo and the Fire TV are the only ways to get Alexa interactions. Next question from Lewis. He says, do you think Alexa will come to Amazon tablets too, or is it already there? I mean, unless I missed a big announcement or something, I don't think Alexa's on the tablets yet. I definitely think it will come soon. It's probably not as handy on the tablets just because, you know, the interface, you know, a voice assistant is fairly handy on the phone. I think it's super handy in a dedicated, always listening device like the Amazon Echo. But I would think that definitely Alexa will probably be coming to the tablets. Like I was saying before, when I was talking about the new Alexa skills, the new Alexa ratings and stuff, it definitely seems like Amazon is full on behind Alexa and turning it into a very powerful platform. And so I think they're going to probably put it on as many different devices as they can. I think coming in 2016, we'll probably see some brand new home dedicated type devices that are meant to stay home, you know, not like tablets or phones that travel. But I think we'll see even more devices released by Amazon that include Alexa. And yeah, I think it'd be silly not to put Alexa on the tablets, even though I don't think it's going to be used that much. It's still probably pretty cool, and they'll probably do it. Lewis also asks, what do you think of the Amazon tablets? Of course, they are no iPads, but if you just use for surfing, email, and video playback, what do you think? I think Amazon's tablets, hardware-wise, are fantastic. For the price, for what you get, it's pretty awesome. I mean, sure, you're not getting Retina screens where you know everything is super crystal clear, but you're still getting pretty damn nice screens, and the price is just great. I mean, their 10-inch tablet is on sale right now for, I believe, $180. So you can buy two of those tablets and then have a decent chunk of money left over for the price of an iPad, a regular iPad. That said, the iPads kick Amazon and Android tablets, but as far as apps go, I'm not a fanboy of either one. I always try to make that clear. I have both devices. I have iOS devices and I have Android devices and I have Amazon devices in my house. Each one has advantages here and there, but iPad apps blow away Android's apps. So if you're fine with the functionality that comes with the tablet without having to go into the App Store, then I think it's a great buy for the Amazon tablets. Because like you said, it's going to do web browsing pretty well. It's going to do video really well. It's going to do email really well. Those are very basic things. They're built in. Amazon has created very nice apps for all of those, and you're going to be fine there. And so that's a good buy. But if you're looking to have a tablet, like replace your laptop or something like that, you know, I recommend people to stay away from Android in that case, just because the iPad app ecosystem is so much better. But again, it's more than twice the price. So everybody has to decide for themselves. I mean, it's not like Amazon's tablets are junk or Amazon's App Store is junk. I mean, especially with Amazon Underground, there are a lot of really nice apps there, and they're completely free if you're fine with dealing with like just a little ad that shows in at the beginning sometimes when you launch the app. That's basically how Amazon Underground works. You know, it's all up to you. If you want the best experience and the best app selection, I still say iPads. But I mean, for that price, Amazon tablets are good. I have Amazon tablets, I have iPads, and each one kind of serves different purposes. You know, the Amazon tablets are the cheaper tablets that I kind of toss around. I keep one like in the kitchen for that quick lookup. But if I'm going to sit down on the couch and I'm going to look something up, or I'm going to watch like a YouTube video while my wife's watching TV or something like that, I'm grabbing the iPad. That's for sure. I'm not grabbing the Amazon tablet just because the app selections are just better. All right. Next question from CJ3333. He says, recently installed ES File Explorer and the edges are cut off. The Disney Junior app does this too. How do you adjust the app to fit the screen? Basically, there are two adjustments that you want to look for. They're actually not within the apps themselves. So the Fire TV itself, if you go into the settings section and then the display section, there will actually be a screen adjustment where you can shrink the actual area that the screen takes and expand it. So you can adjust that way. That's probably your best bet. Maybe you have it adjusted oddly. The other thing to look at is your TV itself. There's something called overscan. It's labeled differently on different TVs, but overscan is kind of a common name for it, where the TV itself will actually stretch the image a little bit beyond the display because it assumes you're watching video. And so losing, you know, 10 pixels along all the edges, is you'll never notice that with a video. But when you're doing apps and you've got actual like interfaces and borders and that sort of stuff, that is 10 pixels are definitely noticeable. Look at your TV settings. If you have the option to turn off whatever they call it, probably overscan, turn that off. That way you'll get, you know, 1-to-1 pixels. There won't be a stretching. So between both of those, you should be able to get your screen aligned perfectly. Next question here is from Tom42. He says, is there a DNS changer app that works on a wired connection for AFTV 1 and or AFTV 2? I don't know of any myself. DNS changing and VPNs and that sort of stuff don't work too well on the Fire TV. I always recommend, if you're switching between different DNSs, you know, most likely you're probably using a geolocation rerouting service to watch content that might be geographically blocked or restricted for you. Really, it's a lot easier to just go hardware instead of software. They sell little travel routers. They're like $10 to $15. You know, I don't know if your budget is fine with that, but it's a lot easier to just set those up in addition to your regular network at home and have that be, for example, your DNS one. And then this one is your regular local DNS router. And so you can, you know, change things out that way. For a wired connection, I mean, you're going to have to just unplug and plug in from one router to the other. But it's actually a lot better if you're on Wi-Fi, because if you set up two different Wi-Fi networks, one your regular Wi-Fi router and one the little $10, $15 travel router. I'll put a link in the show notes. There's one that has really, really great reviews from a company called Hutu. I think it's $15 on Amazon, sometimes even less when it's on sale. But both of them are Wi-Fi routers. And if you have two different Wi-Fi networks, then from the Fire TV's interface, you could just go into settings, go into network, and select which network you want to be on. And one will be your regular local DNS, and the other one will be your geo-restricted DNS. And so that's really the easiest way to do DNS switching on the Fire TV, is to actually have two separate Wi-Fi networks. I know it might not be ideal. I know you're on a wired connection, but it is definitely the simplest way to go if that's what you want to do. All right, that will conclude episode number 20 of the AFTV Newscast. Thank you so much for listening or for watching. Of course, the podcast is available through audio formats, either through RSS feed, through iTunes, through Stitcher, through TuneIn. Soon, when on Google Play, when they finally launch their podcast thing. Video version of this is always up on YouTube on Saturdays. Welcome to watch there. If you are watching the video version on YouTube right now, please hit that like button. It really helps out. Hit that subscribe to my channel. I've got some video ideas coming out pretty soon, hopefully. If you missed the announcement from the previous episode, I won't be having a podcast episode the last 2 weeks of December. So that's Christmas week and New Year's week. I will return in January the following year. So look for that. As always, thanks for listening if you're listening to the audio version. Thanks for watching if you're watching the video version. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas if you celebrate Christmas. Have a good one. Have a safe new year. And I'll see you guys, or you'll see me next year.